work session on House Bill 2455. And Janet, we catch us up to speed then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had a preview of what was going to be in House Bill 2455 on Monday or Wednesday afternoon. This is the bill that exempts towing and vehicle repair companies from requirements to have a vehicle dealer's certificate when the company sells vehicles acquired through possessory lien. You have at your place this morning the Dash 6 amendments, and again, they were discussing concepts on Wednesday afternoon. The Dash 6 amendments limit the exemption from dealer licensing for tow companies and vehicle repair businesses to 12 or fewer vehicles and specifies that the vehicles under the exemption be sold at the business location of the lien claimant. And it also specifies that vehicles sold or consigned to other dealers or to wreckers need not be counted in determining the level for the exemption. There's a number of representatives in the audience, Mr. Chair, that may want to speak to these amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Does anyone want to, Monty or Debbie, want to talk to the Dash 6 amendments?
They seem to be agreed.
Or you said everything you want to say.
They're sitting on opposite sides of the room. So.
They were sitting next to each other before.
Kelly, would you like to? Is there any physical? We have no physical on it. Is there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation. We've looked over the amendments, and it's a very, very small fiscal, less than $10,000.
Okay, thank you then, Kelly. The chair would move the Dash 6 amendments to 2455. Is there any discussion?
I was just somewhere there's a limitation to the number of vehicles. I don't see it.
12.
On line 5? On the amendments? On the.
12. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, is there any. Representative Mabry?
I just had a question. I was excused when this originally came up, but does this amendment now, does a tow, after 12 vehicles, a tow company needs to get a license? Is that the way this works?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. Kelly?
No, yes.
I thought I just walked through a little.
Okay.
Well, that would sure help me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation. What this is doing, on, if you look at the A6, what it's saying in lines 3 and 4 is a lien claimant, and that could be a mechanic, a tower, the apartment house owner that gets stuck with the car, can sell to foreclose. That means an auction. Okay. Then lines 5 through 7 says a lien claimant in a 12-month period can sell 12 or fewer acquired through possessory liens if they're sold at the business location lien claimant. That means you go to the auction that doesn't sell, you can sell 12 a year after the auction, and you're still not a vehicle dealer. And then what the section 4 on lines 12 through 16 are saying is if you sell, you can sell at an auction as many as you need to. You can sell after an auction 12, and you can sell. And if you sell to a licensed wrecker or a licensed dealer, it doesn't count against the 12, and it doesn't count about the auction.
And also,
and so you won't. And consignments. So you won't. Yeah, consignments or sell. You won't need to be a dealer or to do that.
Good, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the Dash 6s are adopted. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2455 as amended to the floor, 2455A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves that House Bill 2455A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? We've talked plenty about this one. Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Beyer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Let me look at my folder.
Aye,
Jeff.
Just give it a thumbs up.
They got
together.
Come back to me.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
You need more time, Dingfelder?
Yeah, I read it last
time. Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye. Now that I've given it.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Beyer will be the carrier on the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Drop down to that one there. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2954 and Representative Krupp.
Which number are we on, Brian?
I felt like we were just together last night.
You got to stop meeting like
this. No comment. Good morning, members of the committee, and Mr. Chairman especially. I am State Representative Jeff Krupp from House District 17. I want to thank the chairman for being gracious enough to hear this bill when it was scheduled the other day. And my staff and I simply didn't communicate, and I didn't realize you're having the hearing. So I thank you for the opportunity to talk about this issue today. House Bill 2954 is a simple concept. In concept, it is a philosophical issue. In reality, it frankly sort of builds on a great idea and a great direction that the Department of Motor Vehicles has moved in the last couple of years in terms of a pilot project. I'm sure you've heard about that, where they're offering some services of the Department of Motor Vehicles in car dealerships. And this is sort of a similar idea, but it's a bit of a different concept in that what we're talking about doing here is closing three DMV offices yet to be determined and replacing them with in essence, the same type of a pilot program as is currently in place today, but expanded to open up 10 private, competitive offices that offer the same services as those three that would be closed. Now, the bill also requires that two of those private offices provide Spanish language services only, and one that provides Russian language services only. Now, I'm looking at Representative Zahner there, and there's a reason why. It's because Representative Zahner's area not only includes many individuals who speak Spanish, but also many individuals that speak Russian. And we thought that this was an interesting twist to this concept. And I am not, frankly, necessarily married to any stringent provision of this type in this legislation. So, in other words, I would be happy to make adjustments based on the committee members and the chair's direction on this issue. I think it is important, though, that in certain ethnic areas that we offer the services to be plainly able to communicate with those individuals who do not yet speak the English language. We wouldn't want to obviously preclude anyone from being able to walk in there who spoke the English language, obviously. But clearly we want to make a very strong statement that we want at least some of these offices to be staffed with individuals who are able to do that. The other part of this bill that we do describe on page 2 what a private full-service driver motor vehicle service office means. And it would provide all of the services provided by the Department of Transportation concerning driver motor vehicle services, except the written and skills tests for drivers and licenses permits. Now, we're also not married to that concept either. You could do both. I thought for the purposes of this discussion that we would limit this to the other services so that we wouldn't necessarily interfere with some of the pilot projects that were going on out there if they happen to be in the same area. One of the things that's important here to keep in mind is that there will be some security issues. It would be important to develop in this process, if we're going to offer all of the services that would be offered currently in the Department of Motor Vehicles offices that would be closed, that those same security issues that the Department of Motor Vehicle currently employs would be in effect in the private sector under these contracts. Now, frankly, I had wanted to go further than this concept. In fact, I have drafted amendments to have done something a bit more creative and innovative and proactive. What I actually drafted amendments for, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, was the following the New Zealand model of how New Zealand, in essence, downsized their federal Department of Transportation and privatized a great many functions of it. They went from about around 5,000 folks down to about 250. In fact, the gentleman that is in charge of that agency today was here in the state of Oregon just a couple of weeks ago. Many of the members of this group had dinner with him. He was around the Capitol the next day. We had a great opportunity to chat with him. Another one of his compatriots will be here soon, the first week in May, Robin Cook, who actually was a federal employee at New Zealand and now is working for a private consulting firm that actually came out of the federal DOT of New Zealand. They have done some marvelous things, and I wanted to embrace that concept here because I felt the timing was right. We have a director of the Oregon Department of Transportation who is a very creative and innovative individual who is doing his very best, I think, with the resources that he has today. As you know, we have a monumental bridge problem, and I think he's doing great work in trying to reorganize and bring efficiencies to the Oregon Department of Transportation. I applaud them, and I applaud the Department of Motor Vehicles for working with him and establishing these pilot programs. And I thought that we could carry this even further. I thought that the time was right because we do have great challenges. We need to build roads in this state. We need to fix, as you know, this tremendous bridge problem. And one of the solutions that we could have embraced would have been the concept as they have employed successfully in New Zealand. In New Zealand, they have not raised any taxes or fees related to transportation for 11 years. They have done 30% more with the dollars they have received year after year after year. And what you've got to understand is that with the same revenues for 11 years static, their accident rate has gone down by huge numbers, and they're carrying 52% more traffic. 52% more traffic. It is a phenomenal success story. And other countries are doing it. Other places in America are doing it. In Florida, Senator Bruce Starr will tell you because he's been there, in Florida they have gone to, in essence, contracted out maintenance fence to fence. Now, that was not an easy process. It took them about 12 years to achieve that part of what the Florida DOT is currently doing. That's the concept I wanted to embrace. The amendments would have called for a transition team to have been formed, and over the period of 1 year, they would analyze each division of ODOT, each department of ODOT, each function of ODOT, to determine if some of them could be candidates for being formed into separate private corporations. And this is essentially what they did in New Zealand. That process would have taken a year. There would have been private consultants that would have been appointed by the Speaker, the President of the Senate, and the Governor, along with each manager of ODOT division to have brought this idea together. They would have come up with recommendations. We would have formed private, quasi-private corporations because there are legal issues there, much along the lines of what we have today, the entity of SAFE. The state of Oregon would have done all of that. We would have given those private corporations 3 years to have transformed themselves into individual corporations in the private sector. They would, during that three-year period, have protected contracts with the Oregon Department of Transportation to continue the same services that they conduct today. That would have been also inclusive of DMV, and that brings me back to my bill. By the way, the reason we didn't go forward with a more advanced concept like New Zealand is because I had discussions with the governor's office. They were not interested in going that direction because of some of the other monumental challenges we face regarding the budget and the public employees retirement system. That's why we didn't go down with that road. So I thought it would be good that we would have continued discussions on doing something like the bill that you have before you today. It is an interesting concept. I think it's worthy of one of further discussion. I think that it is a bit innovative, and I think it is one that we can perhaps continue to work on. Perhaps we can make this a pilot program, another pilot program that we could employ in this state as another step of moving forward to offer greater services to our clients. And the clients are the people of the state of Oregon that utilize the DMV services. I have to say that the DMV offices that I go to, people are very courteous. I enjoy going there. Fortunately, I don't have to go there a lot anymore, as I'm not having to register as many vehicles because I'm not farming as much as I used to be. They generally are working very hard. There's a great little office in Staten that I go to. I got my driver's license in a great little office in Junction City, Oregon. It's still there today, and I'm glad it's there. I'm hopeful that the increasing costs of government will not drive those small offices out of existence. DMV has closed some offices in some places because, frankly, it's been too expensive to maintain them and keep them open. And that's why they have seen the wisdom, and the director has seen the wisdom, of establishing pilot programs in the private sector to take care of some of those functions. I want to move that ball, advance that just a little bit further. Because the necessities of the budget, the necessities of diminishing revenues to the Oregon Department of Transportation, the necessities of public employees' retirement system is probably going to put additional pressure on closing additional offices. And that's why I think it's worthy that we discuss this and look at expanding it further. With that, Mr. Chair, I will take questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Representative Byron.
A lot of questions come to mind. The first one that pops out at me in bold here is that, and is a surprise to me, being who you are, a fee increase basically on all transactions that take place in these privatized offices that the customer is going to have to pay. Would that fee increase also be on services that are not now charged for? I mean, DMV does a lot of things that they don't charge the driver for. Would these people be able to charge a fee for those now?
The way this legislation is currently written, I would say yes. I'm not sure that after the administrative rule writing to implement this legislation, that every component of services delivery that DMV is currently doing would be necessary. I think that is an interesting point, and it ought to be discussed further also. If you're going to, the private sector has to have some reason to want to deliver these services. Now, part of that, you know, obviously if you're in the private sector, you're in the private sector for business. The pilot programs that are ongoing today with offering some limited DMV services at car dealerships are currently advantageous to those car dealerships. They're advantageous to the customer, too, to the people of the state of Oregon, because you can always go in there. Car dealership wants people coming in their doors to look at cars. And if they're coming in to obtain DMV services, that's a great incentive for them. For some of these other offices, maybe that wouldn't be car dealerships, it would make sense that they would be able to add a surcharge to be able to cover their costs. Keep in mind that we are reducing public employee costs, which are, even though they come out of the gas tax dollars and registration dollars and all of the fees that are collected today, we're going to stretch those dollars, and we're trading off. And either that we can raise the gas tax, either the state of Oregon can raise license fees to help stretch those dollars, or we can go to the private sector, or we can offer better services and allow them to put a surcharge on. People are going to pay for it one way or the other. And I think that's obvious as we're talking about moving a package through this particular session. As we do with licenses, this is similar. If you go to buy your hunting license, your fishing license, you're typically are going to buy that from a vendor who is charging $1.50 as testimony we heard yesterday in our committee regarding shellfish licensing. So it's a similar concept. If the private sector has to be incentivized to offer the service, if that service is beneficial and better services are provided to our customers, they can make that choice to do that. Now, I'm not saying that we should close all of the DMV offices in a given area so that the customer base doesn't have the choice. If the customer wants to go to a DMV office that's open, they can. And they could maybe pay a little bit less. Or if they want to go down the street to their local car dealership or auto repair or some other appropriate private vendor, they could go there maybe at an off hour that would be more advantageous to them, maybe 8 o'clock at night, and they could charge or they could pay a small surcharge for that convenience. We do that a lot in America today, and I think that that would be a wise choice, that we would implement any idea of this type in a manner that you wouldn't force people to have to go to a private dealership or a private vendor right away, so they could have that choice because they would clearly have to pay a surcharge.
Representative Engel.
Thank you. Representative, a couple of questions for you. One is, I testified against privatization of the vehicle inspection program for a number of reasons, but one of them was the concern that I have is accountability. And regarding privatization, one of the things that I'd like to see us do as a body is look at some criteria of when we privatize something. You know, what are the reasons? Is it going to save us money? Is it going to provide service more efficiently? Is it going to create more jobs? Is it going to, you know, create living wage jobs, that type of thing? So I'm not sure that I understand, you know, why you want to do this. I've heard about PERS. But my question is, how do you address the accountability issue? Because even though, let's say that we did privatize, you know, hypothetically, some DMV offices, that's still a function that ODOT would have to, or DMV, mm-hmm. There'd have to be some oversight of this private provider, just like happens now with the private car dealers. And I'm mm-hmm. totally supportive of that. I have no issues with that at all. So the concern that I have is I don't see how we're going to save money if we'd still have to have the oversight by the agency to make sure that we were being accountable and providing that service in the same manner that we were providing it before. So if you can help address that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfield, I'd be happy to. Good question, by the way. One of the important ones that has to be answered, because if you cannot offer better service for lower cost, there's no point in doing it. And I think that's obvious. The pilot programs that are ongoing today are being successful. I think time will tell. I think we would need more time. And we would have to have time, if you implemented this as a pilot project, you would need time to discern exactly, have you met that criteria? And I think that's a very good question. With the accountability issue, you will still always have to have some oversight. Now, it is important that in the countries that have done this, New Zealand, England, have done some of these issues, Sweden, Finland, there are various components of privatization of their federal transportation systems that are in place in all of these countries. Even in the state of Florida, where they have contracted out the maintenance, there is still Florida DOT oversight. They believe it's obviously has been a worthy direction of them to consider. So you will save money, most likely, as that is the reason why more and more states are looking at doing this, because they're, again, wanting to stretch their dollars as our aging infrastructure clearly continues to age. I think the jury is out as to how you... Now, wait a second, Representative.
Are you calling DMV employees aging infrastructure? I couldn't resist that one.
No, I... Kelly, you want to get... Mr. Karen, Representative Dingfield, I would never impugn. I never impugn DMV employees with such a horrible, horrible accusation. I think Kelly's younger than I am, so... No, truly, accountability can be achieved in a cost-effective manner. Other people are doing it. I think we can do it here.
And Mr. Chair, just one follow-up.
The
countries that you mentioned, Representative, just to, because I think it's comparing apples and oranges. Obviously, Florida is a different situation, but I've spent quite a bit of time in some of the countries that you've talked about, and they all have a national health system.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is that the health care costs are not borne by that direct agency. I mean, it's a whole different system. So I just want to point out that when you move people here, it means they're losing their health benefits. In those countries, they still have health insurance. And I think it's sort of comparing apples and oranges, and it's very hard to compare with another country as far as cost savings. I mean, I have to look at the whole system.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Dingfelder, I would disagree to some extent. You are correct in that those are mostly, and I find it interesting that you would characterize that in that manner. And I say characterize, those are socialist countries. New Zealand privatized their ODOT under a socialist government because their back was against the wall. They had to do it. Now, just because you go to privatized circumstance doesn't mean you lose your health care benefits. If this country, and this is a whole other subject, I don't want to get into it, but my opinion, this country could solve a lot of our problems in terms of the rising costs of health care with a number of legislative issues. And one of them would be offering medical savings accounts, which I think is a great incentive for people to save money for medical expenses. Then they wouldn't have to have a $250 deductible. When I was farming by myself, I had a $5,000 deductible because I was worried about, frankly, it was a catastrophic loss. We could employ various ideas like that. They do have socialized medicine. When it comes to health care, we can work within the framework of what we have, and we can still offer good benefits. And frankly, we don't. Well, I'm not talking about doing away with union jobs here, by the way. If you employ the practices of Stephen Goldsmith, mayor of Indianapolis, who in 7 years in a row contracted out competitive sourcing, it's called, various portions of state government, they actually reduced their actual operating budget, reduced it for 7 years in a row. And the unions get about almost 60% of the bids. So you still have union wage, you still have family wage, living wage, jobs, and we could do that in this concept too. Just because you go to a privatized circumstance doesn't mean that you're going to lose the ability to make a good income if you work there under that circumstance. It depends on how you do it. You can do this right or you can do it wrong, because there are also examples of privatization that haven't worked well because they have not been implemented well. And I think it's clear that if you have union members that are involved in this process, that you ought to give those union members the opportunity to bid for those jobs. And frankly, they have the advantage because they know how to do those jobs already. And that's why in Indianapolis it works so well for so many of the unions, because they know where the savings are. And they're as frustrated as anyone, because, frankly, when you have large bureaucracies, it is difficult sometimes to be as efficient as you would like to be, because the very nature of bureaucracy, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, because it happens in both.
Thank you, Representative.
Jeff, do you envision that these 10 new offices would be within existing businesses or freestanding new businesses?
Mr. Chair, great question. It could be either, in my opinion. You could open up a new business. So in other words, if you decided to close a DMV office in one area and replace it with, say, three private competitors, there's no reason that you couldn't allow the current DMV staff to form their own company and provide the services, maybe even rent the same facilities that they have today. That would be a new entity. Or you could expand this to, or you could allow that to happen, and you could allow the car dealership down the street to do the same thing.
Representative Mabry.
I had occasion last week to visit DMV office to relicense my little scooter. It cost me $9. And as we were talking about privatizing, I was considering the load limit, you mean?
That's
Oh, my. Oh, my.
That's a great way to...
Can I leave now, Mr. Chair?
Now, in the vehicle that carries, they've got to weigh at least as much
as... This one doesn't?
What was the question?
I'd have forgotten. I guess I was envisioning that if I'm going to be one of these private persons, I was thinking that I would have probably bought 100 of those $9 license tags from DMV and paid $7 a piece or something. But I think what I'm hearing you say is, no, that wouldn't happen. I would, because of the good service I would give, I would be able to collect $11 instead of $9. Is that... Or is it a combination of any of those things?
You know, Mr. Chair and Representative Mabry, it again, I'm not married to any I am married, by the way. I'm not wedded to any great concept here other than creating greater competition and greater service at a lower cost. Okay, now, we don't necessarily have to close a DMV office, even though this bill talks about that. We could amend this bill to say we could add competitive sources.
I understand okay. That. My question is, how am I going to make the buck?
How are you going to make?
How am I going to make the buck? I mean, it's the only incentive I've had for running one of these things if I can make a dollar. And so, would DMV actually discount those? Their product to me so that I could make the dollar and they would not have the employee cost? Or would I need to pay retail to DMV for their product and mark it up and charge you an extra fee to do that and justify that by giving better service and better hours and those kinds of things? How I would make a buck as a DMV dealer?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mabry, if I remember correctly, and I look to Kelly Taylor, that the service fee amounts are set in statute. So unless there was a statutory change that would allow DMV to discount that for some reason, we would have to charge the statutory amount. So anything above that then would be the service fee of convenience. So if you went to a... If it was 8 o'clock at night on a Wednesday night and you needed to go license your vehicle, your scooter, you could go to the scooter shop down the street, wherever you might be, and they could sell you that license. And for that convenience, you could choose to pay that extra $1.50. Or on your way through town the next day, if you had time, you could go stop at DMV and you could pay the $1.50 less. So... The statutory issue to get a discount would have to be addressed, and I have not addressed that in this legislation. That's an interesting idea. I might entertain a we'd have to talk about that kind of an amendment because there's probably some constitutional issues that would come into play there.
Thank you.
Representative Greenland.
Yes, Representative Pope, thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
I have two questions. The first is, my sense is that we're talking about something like we do with hunting and fishing licenses now, where there's, I think it's $1.50 or whatever it is, in addition to the fee. But the hunting and fishing license doesn't carry with it the same status in society that a driver's license carries with. And I wonder, one of the things that makes me the most nervous is the fact we're talking about, do we allow driver's license for people who aren't legal residents, a bunch of things. I mean, that becomes a very important document in society, more and more important mm-hmm. now. And are you made at all nervous by allowing the issuing of driver's license in a bunch of places without the kind of mandatory control over that process that you have when it's maintained in a relatively small number of state-run offices?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlick, I am confident that the systems exist today to allow security to be as good as it is in the private sector as it would be in that limited number of DMV offices today. The systems exist today in other places that are doing this. The there may be some functions that we wouldn't want to do in this. There may be some very, very sensitive functions that I'm sure Kelly can talk about. So if you were, let's say, needing to file an SR-22 filing because you had been pulled over and been convicted of drunk driving, you may not want to come to your local car dealership and go do that. You may not want to go to your local scooter shop and go do that. You may want to go to someplace else, a more discreet facility to do that kind of thing, especially if you're in a small town.
If I may follow up, who's got that? Who am I looking at? Oh, there it is. I mean, if we're worrying about illegal aliens getting a driver's license, look, I'm not sure that I want some 17-year-old clerk at G.I. Joe's, say, like, is selling a hunting license at the service counter, to be the one, A, that either has access to the data systems that allow the kind of determination that could be the criminal justice and a variety of other data systems, nor do I necessarily want that 17-year-old minimum wage clerk at G.I. Joe's to make the determination about whether this is a secure transaction in that driver's license. And I was wondering whether you have any, I mean, I know you worry about national security issues and things, and the driver's license is a very important piece of that national security that we deal with.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenleck, that is an important consideration here. It's a very important point. You would not want an individual who's 17 years old at G.I. Joe's conducting these types of transactions. And I think DMV can tell you clearly there has to be some training involved. I think the software systems and security systems, again, are in place today. They're offered in the private sector, and I think clearly we could make advantage of those. The issue of illegal aliens obtaining driver's licenses is indeed a thorny one. It is a, and again, Kelly can expand on this, as I said on transportation the last two sessions, and on last session specifically, we had discussions with Department of Motor Vehicles. Nationally, there's an effort underway to try to get a handle on that issue. I believe it is clearly capable that if an individual comes in and presents their Social Security number to you, in this type of a system, you can access that online, and it is either denied or approved. And that would tell you right there whether that person was had a valid Social Security number or not. That is actually currently the system that's being employed in the private sector today in many ways, and I know that because my wife is a human resource manager for a company and employs those techniques. She does not do it online yet, however. She has to make a telephone call. But DMV has been working with, and there are some cost structures out there as to what it would cost to go statewide online to do this kind of thing. So it is possible, I'm saying it is very possible, in my opinion, under current technology, to be able to have the security to make that determination. That is part of the broader discussion that we're having, clearly, and you all are having, and as is Homeland Defense Department having at the national level about how to get a handle on this thing. You're right, Representative Greenleck, that driver's licenses are the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, today in America. And my personal opinion is that if it is going to carry such importance as our Social Security numbers do today, that we ought to truly verify that people are who they say they are.
One more
follow-up.
I was searching for a kind of model that seems like where we would go with this bill, and the closest I can come to it is the way we have the kind of semi-privately franchised liquor stores. Is that the kind of model that you envision for this? Is that the...
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenleck, I haven't made that analogy in that connection. I would say that there may be some similarities there. You know, OLCC controls the dissemination of those hard spirits pretty tightly, and I think that any accountability system that would be set up would have to be effective. No, there sometimes there are a lot of, if you'll hear from the agents of LCC, they don't always agree that management is effective. But clearly, I think that there would have to be some very serious oversight and very serious accountability for us to, again, maintain those security issues. We'd want it to work. And if you couldn't provide the security, I think that would be a big disincentive to making the system work at all. And you probably even wouldn't want to go down that road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Beyer.
Thank you. Just a couple little quick ones. Have you run any numbers on this to determine what you would estimate your savings to be? And the second one would be, have you been in any conversations with anybody that might have an interest in doing this, taking over one of these businesses, I guess I would call it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beyer, no and no.
Okay. See, I thought they'd be quick.
to respond, this was the original intent of the legislation, but we actually intended the legislation to go a different direction, and that was what I previously talked about in terms of wholesale investigation of changing the entire structure of ODOT. We decided not to do that for the reason I articulated with the governor's office. So I thought we should continue to advance the discussion in this direction. Because of that other direction that we've recently decided not to go down to, we haven't gotten that far yet. I've not availed myself the opportunity to sit down with DMV and explore this fully with them or the director. I do know that the director is an individual who is interested in being innovative and creative and trying, again, to do the very best he can with the resources that he has. And I know the DMV folks are trying to do that also. So as part of the process, we have the discussion, we continue to debate it, and we enter into discussions with all of those perhaps potential groups, affected groups, and try to reach some sense of what is doable, if anything.
Mr. Chair. I'm really interested in this because I'm working with Troy on driver's ed through car dealerships and Chemeketa College, and it looks like we're going to get the big three dealers in the Woodburn area to start this, and where people can come in and get driver's ed, the kids there. But I was also yesterday visiting with the manager of Mount Hood Meadows, and he feels if we did a partnership with, for instance, Mount Hood Meadows and the people of the state that are plowing their highways up there, they could do it a lot more efficiently and combine some of their talents, because he has people that work for him that on bad snow days or whatever, they're just sitting there, and the same with some of the ODOT people. So he feels plowing those roads up there, and he feels some savings could be done there also. So I compliment you in looking into this, because I think that's a way to go. And as far as security on driver's license, all you need is an envelope that shows you have an address. You don't even need a Social Security in the state of Oregon, as I understand. And I know we need to get a handle on that, and maybe doing some privatizing may improve that.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Zahner, I'm glad to hear that you were able to take yesterday off and go to Mount Hood Meadows. I'm deeply envious of you.
It was a district day. He just kind of moved it.
Representative Zahner, I would say that the relating clause of this bill is broad enough to achieve exactly what you are describing. I will also say, Mr. Chair, that the Polk County Commissioners are very interested in entering into discussions with the Department of Transportation on perhaps at the county level actually contracting to conduct some of the maintenance or even construction at the local county level in the ODOT highway system. They believe they would like to, they think they can do it cheaper, and they'd like to have shot at it. That information has been frankly given to me that they would like to have those discussions. They would like to enter into that type of arrangement. Actually, there is that arrangement already in place to some extent down in the Jackson County area. Yeah. In 1999, we passed a legislation allowing the county and the state individuals and offices down there to work together to provide a maximum efficiency. I'm assuming that that's working well. I have not heard that it wasn't. And I think that's the same direction that Polk County would like to go. That doesn't take legislation to do that, but what you're talking about potentially could take legislation, and Representative Zollner, if you so desired, I would entertain a friendly amendment. In fact, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for indulgence. I know you need to move on. And I would say that if any of you have good ideas as to how to make this a better piece of legislation in a timely manner, I would be happy to chat with you about how to make that happen, because the time is growing short. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate you bringing this to us. And
Thank you again for hearing.
Kelly, did you have any comments on this bill? Or got a whole handful of them. Thank you. Okay.
But she's tired because she's all infrastructure. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I never thought of myself as infrastructure, but okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. It was, as I was listening to Representative Kropp's testimony, I wanted to just bring you up to speed on what is in place, because I think there may be a little confusion on that, because when we read the bill, we see it doing something fairly different than what I think the intent might have been. In the 97 session, a bill passed that gave us the authority to enter into agreements to with people that are non-employees of the department to transact business on our behalf. But before we did that, they asked us to do a study with stakeholders and private sector involved in everything, and we did, to see what services or benefits would be of the great, what services, if done by the private sector, would be of the greatest benefit. And we did that study and came back and reported. And what we found out is that lock, stock, and barrel is not what people are interested in, because there are things that government does, that what we do, that people think we still should do, and things that we do that people do not believe would be profitable to do in the private sector because of the time commitment and things with the transactions. For example, going through suspension and reinstatement of a driver's license can be fairly complex, can be fairly time-consuming, not making a very big amount of money. So what they did come up with are things like drive testing, maybe conducting the knowledge test by third parties, if we were to accept credit and debit cards at DMV offices, having integrator service, a private sector company that is the link between DMV and the third parties out there. That is one of the things that they came up with. For example, the auto dealers doing stickers and license plates. Having the internet offer certain services 24/7. And what they looked at was which transactions have a high enough volume and simple enough transaction that would make it worthwhile to do this. That's what we've gone forward with. And the current legislation gives us the authority to do that. Although it mentioned study these things, we studied other things as well, and we can go forth and do agreements like that. We have many, many partnerships in place. We have public-to-public partnerships in place. DEQ, you can go into DEQ, not only get your vehicle tested, but do your vehicle renewal reminder at the same time. They'll give you the stickers. You're done. You don't have to go to DMV. And we find that increasingly being taken up by the public as something to do. It has worked very well. We have a lot of private partnerships also, issuing snow park permits, things like that. Now, I want to go through and tell you what we've done since this enabling legislation went into place. We have 292 partners out there that are helping to conduct drive tests. And they did about 15,000 tests last year. Now, that pales in comparison with the amount of tests we do, but still, it has been growing, is my point. Now, they are charging, by the way, the legislation that's in place today, we cannot set a limit on the amount that they charge above the statutory fee. It's pretty much whatever the market will bear. And that was intended by the legislature back in 97. The testers charge anywhere from $75 to $200 for a commercial test and an average of $30 for a non-commercial test. That's your regular driver's license. So that's what non-commercial means. We are conducting a pilot program with a private sector company called CVR. They're the integrator. They're the link between us and the auto dealers to allow auto dealers to issue plates and stickers. We have 10 dealers in 17 locations doing that. The pilot is going very, very well, and we are expecting to launch that full July or August of this year and open it up to whatever dealerships are interested. We've also partnered with a private company called Covansis. They are the ones that are helping us create the internet link that will allow people to do their vehicle registration renewals. We do millions of these in a year. That's one of those large volume transactions, fairly simple to do, that makes sense to do in a different way than just at a DMV office. And also to do change of address stickers on the DMV website and it make it a more of an interactive than it is today. That will be complete in December. Next year, we will begin working on a long-awaited program that's a good complement to the electronic vehicle registration. That's our name. We call it EVR. That's the dealer's issuing plates and stickers. And that's electronic liens and titles. Right now, when a lender lends you money on a car and you buy it at the car dealer, they may do the paperwork, but you don't get the title. We actually issue a paper title and send it to the lender, the bank or the credit union, whoever, and they have to store that paper title until you pay that loan off. Then they have to try to find it 5, 6, 7 years later because loans are getting longer and longer on cars, and then send it into us to say, okay, Kelly's paid off her loan, go ahead and give her the title. An electronic lien or title means we will protect their security interest electronically. They will send us electronic notification saying Kelly has paid off her loan. They won't have to store the paper. They won't have to look for it. It'll be much quicker for the consumer, much quicker for the lender. Now that we will start next year. And again, we will be working again with private sector to help us build that. And that will be up at the end of the 05 biennium. Now, about 2954 and some of the concerns we have are issues for you to consider. Right now, the way the statute reads, we have the authority, and we have been, as you can see, moving forth to do pieces that people have been interested in and are willing to do and make sense. The way the bill is structured, intended or not, says you will find someone who wants to do all the functions at a DMV office except the drive and written test, which means they will do all of the functions. Not piecemeal. We can't just do a piece here, a piece there. It has the effect of undoing all of the things we've been doing. It would undo the vehicle registration. It would undo some of the things we've done because they're only doing a piece of it. They're not doing all the functions. And frankly, I don't know that you will find some businesses that want to do everything we do at a DMV office. For example, disabled parking permits. Because of the ADA, you cannot charge for them. We are now issuing those for free. So they could not even charge the $5 service charge for those. So there are things we do that I'm not sure the private sector wants to take on. We've already talked about security, and what we have found with the other states that have gone to outsourcing licensing, it takes a major commitment of auditing to make sure that the security is in place. You're no longer just worrying about the employees in your office. You're worrying about things that are happening outside of your office. It does take a major commitment. We are hearing that from our other states, our sister states. The bill requires to close three. Gonna close three. Hopefully you can get 10 agreements in place. If you don't get 10 agreements in place, you've now reduced service. You've made it so people have to go further for the service. The same thing, I think, with the Spanish-only or Russian-only. We do offer tests in Spanish, Russian, and Korean in our offices. We do have people that are bilingual. We have tried very hard to reach out. It can be difficult sometimes to recruit with the positions and things, but we do have the positions. We do have them there. We've also been using some internet related translation services that we can do to help communicate with folks with foreign language. And again, I've already mentioned that limiting the surcharge to $5 goes against what the original intention was, which was let the market decide what it will be so that if people were interested in doing the service, they could charge what they thought would be reasonable and that people would be willing to pay. Usually with the drive test, what we find, people are needing to get to a job. It's a commercial. Mostly those are commercial driver licenses that are happening because people have a job waiting for them. They can't wait to get in a week to get a drive test. Our tests are done by appointment. We do have a fairly short calendar, but sometimes the job that's waiting for them can't wait for that, and they need to just go pay someone to one of the testers, get tested, and bring in the results to us. We do think that privatization is an important tool. We've embraced the 97 legislation because we know that business grows, you don't necessarily get more employees. But we also believe that there is a limit as to what the private sector will want to take on. They don't want to take on everything. They like to take on the low-hanging fruit. Don't blame them. But we're government. We take on a lot of things that other people don't want to do. So I'm not sure we'll be able to find people to take on all of the functions and want to do them. So.
Thank you, Kelly. Representative Byer.
I have had conversations with some DMV employees who will tell me that, and you may not be the best person to answer this, but the EVR program has a much higher error rate than the these transactions that would be handled inside DMV. So is that a problem?
Mr. Chair and Representative Byer, we are holding those folks that are doing the EVR to the same standards we do our folks, the 2% or less error rate, and I am not aware of a higher error rate through the EVR system.
Any other questions of Kelly? Thank you, Kelly, for your testimony this morning. Michael Slater, please.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Slater. I'm political director for SEIU Local 503, and I'm here representing the aging infrastructure of the DMV. I want to make a few remarks, and I will be quick. The first is that I'm going to treat the bill on its face, although we know that wasn't the original intent. The original intent of this bill was as a vehicle to privatize ODOT maintenance. That's why some of the numbers and some of the details haven't really been fleshed out for the DMV portion, but I want to speak to that specifically today. And I will be brief. The first is this bill does not save the public any money. And as a matter of fact, it will increase, it has the possibility of increasing fees by at least $5. Representative Krupp was fairly candid when he said, we're going to have to create a fee incentive for people to want to do this business. And I think we're very concerned that fees will go up rather than actually save money for the customer. Second, Representative Krupp did acknowledge that there may be new fees on services that are provided currently for free. The third is the ODOT is going to have to actually increase costs in order to do compliance, monitoring, and oversight. I think Kelly pointed that out, that there's already a significant cost in other states for the security oversight that goes with privatizing the issuance of driver's license and other things related to driver's license. There will also be additional costs in terms of the technology infrastructure that's needed to link with the private sector as it does the as it fulfills some of the DMV functions. And finally, there will be added costs in terms of maintaining that system. I think Representative Krupp skipped over some of the serious concerns about the integrity of the database and the security of issuing driver's license. We've seen in other states where the private sector has that capacity that there's been numerous instances of fraud where private agents have actually sold driver's license for cash that have later been indicted and imprisoned for that. So we have very significant concerns about the integrity of the system, who has access to the information, and situations where private vendors may actually sell for cash license to people who aren't qualified. So with that, I'll just conclude my testimony. We are opposed to this bill. We don't think it makes good public policy sense. In our perspective, first, we should do no harm. I think there's no compelling reason to do this, and we encourage you to vote no on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Chairman Brown?
Just a minute, Michael.
Can you give me those states that where the fraud occurred in the private sector there and they arrested them? They're doing jail time.
Ohio and I believe New Jersey. Ohio is the example that I have. Ohio and New Jersey.
Thank you.
And I'd be happy to get more information for you, sir.
Thank you again.
Thank you,
Michael.
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate your testimony. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2954 and open a work session on House Bill 2768. And Representative Prozanski and Janet, will you catch us up where we're at with this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the bill that would allow a bicycle operator to proceed through a stop sign or a flashing red light signal without stopping if they do so at a safe speed and if they yield right-of-way to traffic and pedestrians already in the intersection or approaching it. It creates the offense of improper entry into an intersection as a Class D traffic violation punishable by a maximum fine of $75. Should have at your place today a dash one amendment that Representative Brzezinski's office had drafted that would increase the level of the violation, the new violation in the that the bill creates from a Class D to a Class B traffic violation. A B is punishable by a maximum fine of $300.
I'm sure you get tired.
Spoken of his folks.
Okay. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Janet. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. If you like, the reason the dash ones are before you is because there was some concern by some of the committee members as to having a differential between a bicyclist or a motor operated vehicle having a different fine structure than each other. So we were very willing and did in fact take the initiative to draft the dash ones, and would encourage you to pass the dash ones into the bill and move the bill forward if you would.
Any questions? Representative Mabry.
So this would increase the size of a...
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry, what it will actually do is maintain the current level as it stands in statute. What we had looked at was maybe reducing it because of it. Rationale of bicycles being different than in the sense of the motor vehicles, and maybe that the lesser fine would be appropriate. After discussions with members of this committee, I also spoke with individuals from BTA, which is the Bike Transportation Alliance. We all agreed that it should be the same. They should be held accountable exactly as they would today.
Follow up.
Would you be willing to entertain an amendment with it? Would it extend the same pleasure? Benefit to my scooter. Apparently, that means no.
Mr. Chair,
you get off that scooter,
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry.
I'm going to put my foot down.
I don't think at this point. I think that might be a little bit further than what all of us would think would be appropriate.
Okay.
Well, I'll be glad to ride with you.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfelder.
I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2768.
Representative Dingfelder moves the we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2768. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2768 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 2768 as amended to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative's honor.
I love to see these guys that ride bikes that have these clips on have to stop and undo those clips. I ride my Schwinn Varsity, and I don't have clips, but I will vote for the bill.
Representative Greenland.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote yes on the bill to move out of committee, but I need to put on the record I have not yet decided how I'll vote on the floor on this.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Ryan, you call the roll, please.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
All right.
You don't have to.
Representative Donner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. And Representative Brzezinski, you carry the bill on the floor, huh?
It'd be my pleasure and honor.
Thank you,
sir.
Better wear your bike shoes out there.
Whatever. One pair.
You can bring a stop sign.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can have Brzezinski. And which is his? Okay. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3583, and we have Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. You should have before you a set of Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3583. You'll recall that when you all had a hearing on this last week, that there was concern raised about the fine for violation of this being too high. So actually, in order to maintain complete equilibrium within the building, Representative Przanski's amendment just raised it from a D to a B. This amendment lowers this one from a B to a D. So all things stay exactly equal. No, but I think it was a very legitimate concern raised on the committee to make sure that this was not an excuse to start dinging people with large fines. As Janet had pointed out, the Class B felony is a Class B violation is a large fine. So this drops it down to a Class D, and we were happy to incorporate that, and that is the content of the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dinkel.
Representative Hunt, can you help us achieve equilibrium on tax expenditures in the same way? Because I wanted to really do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dinkfelder, if there was a wide enough relating clause in this bill, I would be happy to.
Mr. Chair,
I did have a question regarding the concern. And I apologize, I missed the original hearing for some reason. I was probably out in surgery or whatever, but regarding, I see that ODOT had a concern about this issuing of the citation, and I wanted to see if you had addressed the concern as far as just the fact education that
right.
Drivers would have to be educated, because you know all of a sudden the law is going to change and people who don't know about the law change are going to possibly receive citations. So I don't know if you can discuss that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder. The probably a couple of responses. One, as we've had further conversations, it's become clear there are lots of traffic laws that Oregon has which differ from California, Washington, Idaho, or the neighboring states. And so it is true that there's not, in fact, as Representative Greenlink pointed out at the hearing at the time, there is not one big sign as you enter Oregon saying, just so you know, these are the 653 laws that we have is different. At the same time, I think it's important to point out that ODOT has actually been doing a safety campaign dating back at least to 1998, specifically encouraging the use of lights. And so to some degree, they have already been doing the safety campaign and have done billboards and radio PSAs and transit billboards, bumper stickers, press releases, the DMV manual, other sources of earned media. So I think in a lot of ways they've actually laid the groundwork for this. And it's especially lowering it to a Class D hopefully will make it clear that this is not something that the intent is increasing safety. The intent is not increasing revenue, although there may end up being some minor positive revenue as a result of citations issued, but that's clearly not the goal.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Greenlink?
I'm ready.
You're fine. Janet?
I just wanted to point out that the amendments, although they reduced the fine for not operating your headlights when your windshield wipers are on, they don't decrease the fine for having to operate your headlights
other times,
at night or at other times when that's.
Okay. Is any other questions? I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to 3583.
Representative Greenlink moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3583. Is there any objection? Or is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So
that. Mr. Chair, I move 3583 to Dash 1 to the floor with a DuPont recommendation.
Representative Greenlink moves House Bill 3583 as amended to the floor with a DuPont recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I still have trouble with this. Like I said the other day, driving down the freeway, broad daylight, a shower came across, and I turned my windshield wipers on in my pickup, but I didn't turn my lights on, and that bothers me. So I'm
going to
be a no on this.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gilman.
I'll also be a no on this.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any other discussion? Ryan, will you call the roll?
Representative Gilman.
No.
Representative Greenlink.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
No.
Aye.
Representative
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries, and would you like to carry it on the
floor? I would be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
That should be a good one.
Let's see.
Give him a bad time.
Now we go to the going to open a work session on House Bill 2749, and Janet, can you catch us up to speed there?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have some late-breaking amendments. I'm just going to pass them out instead of standing up.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
You wash those things this morning.
That's getting thicker all the time.
Mr. Chair, he's picking on me again.
That's not right. That's actually kind of a point of pushing. It's because he went skiing yesterday instead of working.
I'm going skiing tomorrow.
Did I get one?
Did you? Going tomorrow.
Are there enough?
Everybody get a copy of the amendment?
Nope.
Mr. Chair?
Sharing is a nice part of having.
Bill 2749 is a self-service gas bill. It was a one-page, four-line bill. And now it's a 16-page amendment. A couple of things that it does, and Don Phillips is here from Representative Miller's office. It increases the age for an eligible person to be served without having to pay extra from 55 to 65. Representative Miller is more interested in keeping it at 55. And if you want to keep it at 55, we have permission from Legislative Council, the head cheese in Legislative Council, to strike line six if you choose to from the dash 4 minutes. The other thing that this bill does, because the way the original bill was drafted, it involved the fire marshal's office in making sure that the price was not different for a person needing to be served. It takes it into an unlawful trade practice and removes any involvement of the state fire marshal's office. State fire marshal's office currently doesn't come to regular gas stations. It just regulates card lot gas stations. So that would have been an extra FTE and things in the original bill for the fire marshal's office. So this makes, in Sections 8 and Sections 9, makes it an unlawful trade practice if a service station does not serve an eligible customer at the pump. Mr. Chair, again, there's proponents from the petroleum industry, and Don Phillips is here from Representative Miller's office, if there's other fine points to the amendments.
Don, did you have some testimony in one deal? Was there a list of anyone?
No, Mr. Chair, but we do have a piece of testimony to enter into the record from United Seniors of Oregon, and maybe someone else from the audience wants to say something. But
is there anyone else that wants to testify?
Can I ask Shannon a question?
Lee? Certainly.
Shannon, this stuff in Section 4 and 3 and 4, do you have any idea what that's about?
Well,
something about why are we amending card locks as a part of this?
I know the reason for partial amendment to card lock statutes, but I think it may be helpful to have Cliff Olson for talk about some of the amendments in the card lock statutes. Part of it is just to have to put the notwithstanding, because right now self-service is banned, so you don't need the notwithstanding self-service ban because you don't no longer have the self-service ban. So that's one of the changes.
Thank you. Lee? Got
it. I'm Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lee Hazelwood, longtime senior advocate. I'm also a board member of the United Seniors of Oregon, but I did not write that letter. I have not been able to read this lengthy book, but there's a number of things that I see right on the first page at Section 3. You have a complaint or appeal, so set forth the specific grounds of the complaint or appeal, and complaint or appeal shall be accompanied by a fee of $40. And so I'm not sure that a person going into spilling gasoline all over their clothes will have the $40 to make this appeal. unless I'm reading this wrong, and Don was very...
Lee, where are you at on the amendments?
Line 18 on page 1.
Line 18, page 1.
Okay.
But Don was very gracious to give that to me, and I appreciate that, Don, for doing that, but I just haven't had a chance to really study this. But
this isn't changing the existing law, though, is that right? This is the existing law.
Mr. Chairman, I can probably shed some light on this. As I read it, Don Phillips from Representative Randy Miller's office, District 37. Simply Section 3, all it does is leave the existing statutes for where the Fire Marshal does enforce various operations like card locks. And you'll see the brackets there on line 21 on page 1. We simply take out the self-serve prohibition, and that essentially removes the Fire Marshal's office from regulating these types of activities. So all these fines and penalties is existing statute for the Fire Marshal's office, as I understand it, for everyone except for what we're talking about in this bill. Okay. All we did was take gas stations out.
Mr. Chair, Don, what can they file complaints for? Anything they want?
Well, if you'll look on page 8, under Section 8, this is the new section that deals with how do you enforce compliance with the new law allowing for self-serve. And what Legislative Council did was simply include this new provision allowing self-serve under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. And so you'll see all the other things that Trade Practices Act now covers as you go through pages 9, 10, and 11. Oh. And toward the bottom of page 11, you'll see Section ZZ has been added to have the Unlawful Trade Practices Act cover self-serve gasoline provisions. For example, if someone who was a qualified individual, as the language now reads, instead of eligible customer, of the right age and perhaps right disability, and the service station attendant did not come over and pump their gas for them, that person would have grounds to then file a complaint under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act in civil court.
Any other Representative Greenland?
I'm still trying to understand the card lock provisions. Is that so the card lock operators don't have to provide service to people over 65? Is that why they're in here at all?
No. Okay, go ahead.
Chairman Brown, Representative Greenland, the reason that we excluded the card locks out is they are unattended sites, and this is an attended self-service bill. So they would not, if we were to exclude the card locks from this, then they would have to have an attendant on site to attend to those that qualified individuals. So we purposely exclude the card locks from that since they are unattended.
But where are they excluded? I'm trying to read those card lock amendments to see what it's done, which is what, Section 4?
Section 4, line 20, is where you see the brackets again deleting the self-serve provision from the card lock existing law. And we just talked with Legislative Council, and my understanding is nothing in here eases up on the current card lock restrictions, if that's your concern. Everything stays in place.
I can't figure out what it does to the card lock.
I think it's simply a language cleanup.
Chair Brown, actually, the provisions that were left in and what's in this amendment is just a cleanup of the language, the shalls, the musts and those kind of things. It's still if you look up above at the repealed items, it repeals everything around the card lock, but leaves the wording in 480 that affects card lock. It leaves all that intact except for the cleanup of the language.
So 480, 345 isn't changed except to say the card locks are included from 330 and 340.
Right.
Yeah. Talking about non-retail customers.
Cliff, you need to get your name on the record.
Are there any other questions? Representative Guire.
Well, on the piece here that eliminates the requirement that the State Fire Marshal's Office enforce any of the bill's provisions, does that doesn't pull the State Fire Marshal's Office out of any oversight over your operations besides the self-serve? Is that
Chair Brown, Representative Beyer. For the record, Cliff Olson with Mark Nelson Oil Products. I forgot to do that.
Okay.
I've been here so much. I just thought we know you. No, it does not change anything that they are doing currently with the card lock operations. All it does is excludes them from regulation of the retail provisions of this bill, being the self-service.
A follow-up. Do they not have any oversight at this point on attended stations?
Chair Brennan, Representative Beyer, it's my understanding the fire marshal, and they're here today if you have specific questions for them, it's my understanding they have some regulations over existing gas stations right now, although as I understand it from talking to gas dealers, it's pretty minimal. There's hazardous materials paperwork they have to do every year. I think there's some fees involved, but DEQ is a primary regulator of gas stations, and I think there's some other agencies that are involved in regulating their operations. But for the purposes of this bill right here, we're simply excluding the fire marshal from being the self-service police, if you will.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Janet?
And Section 9 is almost identical to Section 8. The reason for it looks like there's a conflict amendment. If another bill passes, looks like somebody else in another bill added something to unlawful trade practices. So this just becomes AAA instead of ZZ. That's just looks like a conflict amendment with another bill.
Be the AAA amendment?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I know. We have to find out if Larry Campbell thinks it's all right.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, folks, for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Yeah, on we need to make a decision on which way we want to go on line 6, Representative Mabry.
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 6, the section that lowers the age limit or increases the age limit to 65 instead of 55, I would move that that line be stricken and that the dash 4 amendments be put into the bill.
Representative Mabry moves that we strike line 6 from the dash 4 amendments and that the dash 4 amendments be adopted to House Bill 2749. Is there any discussion?
I think that's a good thing because my wife could then be willing to admit she's over 55.
Right. That's on the record.
I'm sure
I think we need that shovel.
Is there any other discussion?
We're getting paid for this.
Is there any objection? No. Hearing none, the dash fours as amended are. To House Bill 2749 are adopted. Representative Mabry.
Mr. Chair, I would move the 2749 to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mabry moves House Bill 2749 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes,
Representative Greenlight.
I just want to put on the record that I'm under extreme lobbying pressure from within my own home and from all over my district. And I am going to vote yes for this amendment in committee, but I haven't decided whether I'm going to cave and give up my personal preferences or the preferences of my constituents, especially the one I sleep with. So it might...
Yeah, that's your wife.
It is indeed. It is indeed. If I'm going on the record about it, that's who it is.
Thank you, Representative. Representative's honor.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be a courtesy vote. And I'm going to vote no down on the floor, a resounding no, but we should have some fun down there.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Mabry.
Would it be appropriate to amend my motion to require that Representative Miller carry the
flag? Oh, absolutely.
He will.
Any Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no vote on this bill, and maybe it would be time. Maybe the voters might want this, but this isn't going to the voters. And I am not convinced this is going to be a money saving for our citizens. And I'm just not going to support it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gilman.
I'm going to be a no, and I'm not sure I have good reasons. Maybe it's just a Oregon uniqueness. I want us to stay unique, and so we're going to continue to have gasoline that's pumped, I hope.
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to vote yes to send this to the floor. I think that the bill needs the discussion that I'm sure it will generate from the House floor, and it will be an interesting experience. Ryan, will you call the roll?
Representative Greenlight.
Yes.
Representative Mabry.
Yes.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
No.
Representative Dingfelder.
No.
Representative Gilman.
No.
Chair Brown.
Aye. The motion carries, and Representative Miller will be the carrier, I hope.
Just clear the floor with an almost yes recommendation.
Have fun,
Jordan.
On House Bill 2986, dealing with the medical impairments, and I am totally confused. And Representative Greenlick has graciously volunteered to chair a work committee to try to bring some sense to this, that so even I can understand it, and we'll bring it back next week.
Even worse, I promise to try and get it to even Dr. Bates can understand.
Okay.
Which is more critical.
Anyway, it's obvious we need some more work on this before we take any action with it. And so we'll continue that till next week. And then House Bill 2217, we will also continue to next week. And Janet, is there any?
Just an announcement that we did get permission of the Speaker, because this is the deadline week for working House bills. We did get permission from the Speaker because of the kind of not clear and kind of late coming information about the federal law on this bill. We got the permission based on that to carry this over 2986 to next week. But there isn't very much time beyond that. And Mr. Chair, we're back to 8:30 on Monday, and we're starting Senate bills.
Did you want to move?
No, we're going to hold on to it a little longer.
Yeah. And the workforce for this would be the OMA and Kelly. Anybody else? I don't know whether we want the
Optimus. Mr. Chair, for the record, there seems to be some confusion. The Mount Hood guy was down here yesterday. I didn't go skiing yet.
Okay. Okay.
Taking two grandsons tomorrow and I'm going to go skiing.
Thank you for the clarification, guy.
I just wanted to clarify that. I was here.
And so...
One other thing. Mr. Chair, we also got permission because of the relating clause problem on the van and boat bill, removing of van and boats. A new bill is going to be drafted, so we have permission to work that beyond the deadline also.
Amendment, not amendment.
It's a new bill.
No. There was some screw-ups in the relating
clause. So I think you've milked the sore foot long enough.
And with that, we are...